This is Vaughn from Motion Picture Massacre, and I have written up a statement. Let me get it out here. You are listening to A Little Dead Podcast. Your home for very voluptuous, full frontal nerdity. Like a Russ Meyer movie with fucking horn-rimmed glasses on reading a comic book. Holy shit. You seen the tits on this one? Oh, fucking fantastic.
I'm not very good at singing songs, but here's a try. Scratch. You must first invent the universe. Space is filled with a network of wormholes. You might emerge somewhere else in space, somewhere else in time.
The sky calls to us. If we do not destroy ourselves, we will one day venture to the stars. A still more glorious dawn awaits, not a sunrise, but a galaxy rise. A morning filled with 400 million suns. The rising of the Milky Way. The cosmos is full beyond measure. Elegant truths of exquisite interrelationships of the awesome machinery of nature.
I believe our future depends powerfully on how well we understand this cosmos, in which we float like a mote of dust. The morning sky.
But the brain does much more than just recollect. It intercompares, it synthesizes, analyzes, it generates abstractions. The simplest thought, like the concept of the number one, has an elaborate logical underpinning. The brain has its own language for testing the structure and consistency of the world. A still more glorious dawn awaits, not a sunrise, but a galaxy rose. A morning filled with 400 billion suns, the rising of the Milky Way. The sky calls to us. If we do not destroy ourselves, we will one day venture to the stars.
Thousands of years, people have wondered about the universe. Did it stretch out forever, or was there a limit? From the Big Bang to black holes, from dark matter to a possible Big Crunch, our image of the universe today is full of strange-sounding ideas.
How lucky we are to live in this time, the first moment in human history when we are, in fact, visiting other worlds. A still more glorious dawn awaits, not a sunrise, but a galaxy rise. A morning filled with 400 billion suns. A rising of the Milky Way. A still more glorious dawn awaits, not a sunrise, but a galaxy rise. A morning filled with 400 billion suns. A rising of the Milky Way.
Surface of the Earth is the shore of the cosmic ocean. Recently, we've waded a little way up, and the water seems inviting.
Welcome to episode 122 of A Little Dead Podcast, your place for full frontal nerdity when it comes to finding a killer cookie in the toilet, annoying baby girl voices, and getting roller boogie baked.
Hi.
Yeah, real high.
I'm your host, McPierce. This week, I've got two things to talk about. First is the movie Ginger Dead Man 3, Saturday Night Cleaver. And second is the book I just finished reading entitled Horror in America by W. Scott Poole. Mike Zombie is dead and loving it with 2009's Last of the Living. And Misfit Boy is back and 1 year older to get us in the zone with Uncle Simon and 90 Years Without Slumber. And with those exciting announcements, I know you're anxious to let me know, how's your news?
Hey, how's your news? Would you like to sing a
week, we lost two prolific people. First is someone everybody knows by name. Steve Jobs, CEO of Apple Computers, died on October 5th from pancreatic cancer at the age of 56. But we also lost someone who most may not know by name, but everybody has seen. Charles Napier also passed away on October 5th at the age of 75. Napier was a prolific actor who was in everything from Star Trek, where he played Adam in the original series episode, The Way to Eden, to Hammer on the series BJ and the Bear, to Lieutenant Boyle in Silence of the Lambs, which is another podcast, and a whole lot more. His square jaw and his hard-ass style will be missed. Now for horror news.
Horror news.
A new clip came out this week from Human Centipede 2 Full Sequence, and we're really getting some perspective on our very creepy main character slash villain. He's just very creepy. There was also a new poster release that's strangely provocative. I posted it on the Human Centipede 2 thread on the Little Dead forums. Check the show notes for the link. Stephen King is working on a sequel to The Shining. Called Dr. Sleep, it deals with vampires. Yep, vampires. For the month of October, you can watch the film Kids Go to the Woods, Kids Get Dead for free. Film is done in the style of the classic slasher film, with teens going to a cabin in the woods to celebrate someone's birthday and a crazy killer who has other plans. Check the show notes for the link to that film's website. In science fiction news,
science fiction news.
David Cronenberg has a sequel for 1986's The Fly, which is another podcast, in mind, including a script, but he just needs to get the studio to let it make it. Rumor has it that the Godzilla movie being worked on by Legendary Pictures will feature a man in a rubber monster suit with an animatronic head, and that CGI will only be used to touch up the footage and not to create the whole monster. There's also a sculpture rumored to represent what this Godzilla will look like. And while the sculpture is pretty badass, I can't see how a guy in a suit would be able to pull off the movements. Another rumor has a Halo movie coming out in 2012. The rumor has the film being made by Steven Spielberg and DreamWorks.
I need a weapon.
And this week marks the end of an era. Leonard Nimoy has retired from the Star Trek convention circuit. The 80-year-old actor attended his last convention at Chicago Creation Star Trek Con.
I have been and always shall be your friend.
There's a rumor going around that Seth Green, Jon Favreau, and Robert Orci are working on a government conspiracy television series titled XCOM, which refers to the elite executive committee of advisors to the president who focus on conspiracy theory truths, kind of like the X-Files, but with a crossover into other series such as The West Wing. Or maybe a little Parks and Rec since Green is involved? In video game news... Video game news. Gameplay footage came out this week for Batman Arkham Asylum showing Tim Drake's Robin character. In order to get this, you have to pre-order the game from GameStop. Robin comes complete with his own moves and is playable in the challenge maps, as well as coming with two additional challenge maps. The game trailer came out this week for Dead Rising 2 Off the Record, the story of how Frank West, the hero from the original game, becomes involved in the events at Fortune City. The game itself comes out on October 11th. And speaking of October 11th, in superhero news...
Superhero News!
The feature-length animated film Batman Year One also comes out on October 11th. Check out the trailer. I've included the link in the show notes. There's some indication that Marvel is moving forward with a Doctor Strange movie. In particular, during a round of domain name purchases, Disney, who owns Marvel, purchased such domains as Avengers-Soundtrack.com, AvengersMusic.net, and DoctorStrangeSoundtrack.com. Now, why would they buy that domain in particular if the film's not moving forward? Let's hope that the Sorcerer Supreme is coming to the big screen sometime soon. In zombie news...
Zombie news!
The people at Left 4 Dead, the movie, have started a fundraising campaign in order to help finance their film. These are the same people who posted a sweet video of Bill at the beginning of the zombie apocalypse. There are various levels of contribution that will get you things like your name in the credits, all the way up to one of the survivors' clothing from the film. Check the show notes for the link to help them out. And finally, in real science news, real science news. Scientists have determined that some of the artwork, called finger flutings, on cave walls in France were done by young children. The flutings, which are markings left by simply dragging your fingers through the soft cave walls, are about 13,000 years old. And based on the distance between the individual fingers, researchers have been able to estimate the age of the artists to include children as young as 2 or 3 years old. Gender can also be determined by the shape of the finger markings, and the steadiness of the markings indicate that adults were assisting the children.
Science rules!
So what do you think of this week's news? Do you have any news that you'd like to share? Then call me up on the Little Dead comment line at 206-338-0665 and let me know. Or you can email me at alittledead@gmail.com. And speaking of listener feedback, here's what we have in the Little Dead mailbox.
Go for Papa Palpatine.
You have a collect call from...
Darth Vader.
I gotta take this. Hold on. Vader, how's my favorite Sith? Whoa. Just slow down. Huh? What do you mean they blew up the Death Star? Who's they? What the hell is an aluminum falcon? Okay. So who's left? Are you me? Well, where are you? Wait a sec. You've been flying around for 2 weeks trying to get a signal? Oh, you must smell like feet wrapped in leathery burnt bacon. Oh. I'm sorry. I thought my Dark Lord of the Sith could protect a small thermal exhaust port that's only 2 meters wide. That thing wasn't even fully paid off yet. Do you have any idea what this is going to do to my credit? Hang on. I got another call. What? I'm very busy right now. Well, where are they going? Huh. All right, just get me a turkey club. Coleslaw, I guess. I'm not even going to eat it. What are you getting? Yeah, see, I always order the wrong thing. No, I'll just stick with that. Okay, bye. What? Cherry Coke. Thanks. Sorry about that. What?
Oh, just rebuild it? Oh, that real f***ing original. And who's going to give me a loan, jackhole? You? You got an ATM on that torso light bright? Now get your 7'2" asthmatic ass back here, or I'm going to tell everyone what a whiny bitch you were about Potamame or Panda Bear or whatever the hell her name is.
Oh, jeez, he's crying. Hey, come on, don't do that. I'm just dealing with a lot of crap right now. Death Star blown up by a bunch of f***ing teenagers, you know? I didn't mean to snap. Just get back here. Okay, bye. I love you too.
During this podcast, I've seen a lot of changing. In the way you feel about me, and in the way I feel about you. In here, there is only one action movie being reviewed. But I guess that's better than 20 million. I guess what I'm trying to say is if I can record, and you can listen, everybody can be entertained! Yo, Adrian!
Action Attraction. Your home for all things action. To find out more, visit metalmikey.lipson.com or search for Action Attraction in iTunes.
Hey everybody, it's your pal Mike Zombie, and this week we're going to talk about Last of the Living from 2009. A movie I loved is a bit strong. I really liked this film. I'll tell you A bit about Mike Zombie you may not know. I'm a Libra. No, I am, but that's not where I'm going. I love foreign films. Even outside the zombie genre, I love foreign films, you know, from especially Australian films, love them. This movie was filmed in New Zealand, my second favorite place for foreign films. I love the Mad Max trilogy, and I'm excited that they're still talking about making a part four. And you know what, guys? Listen, I'm mad enough to admit it. I even like Mad Max Beyond Thunderdome. Kiss my ass, don't give a shit if you don't agree. I don't give a fuck. Look at me. Do I look like I give a fuck? No. I like that movie even still. Don't care what you guys say. Okay, not as much as I love Mad Max and the Road Warrior, but I thought, you know, Thunderdome kind of was a neat idea. So I love these types of films. This movie combined all my favorite things. I got my zombie movie, which on its own was an entertaining film. I got my Mad Max mixed in, and I got my foreign film. This was great. This movie was filmed in New Zealand. Though when it started, to be honest, I thought it was Britain, and it started almost identical to 28 Days Later. The guy's wandering around the city, confused, looking what the hell's going on, and the city is dead. They don't state the city, but we're talking New Zealand, so I'm thinking Auckland or Christchurch or something along these lines. This was 2009, I think, just before that real nasty earthquake. We're in some type of apocalypse as far as zombies, but it's a virus, apparently, that's causing this. And we start off with a cast of three guys. I wrote their names down. Morgan, Johnny, and Ash. And these are three guys in their 20s. One is an actor who really didn't do much of his career, but he's in his 20s, so his career is still fairly young. Another is a musician. He's a drummer in a band. And the third guy, I don't know what he did. I'm sure they said, I don't quite remember. As far as personalities go, I mean, you know, they're mid-20s. The actor guy's a bit pompous, a little too sure of himself. The musician guy is just kind of like, fuck it, man, let it roll, whatever, and he's kind of like a wild card. And the other guy's a bit reserved, a little more serious. He's reading a book as the other guys are just chugging beer and hanging out. Now, they're hanging out in a fairly nice house, which I guess isn't all that surprising, seeing as how everyone else is dead. You can have your pick of houses. And they're hanging out, playing Xbox, goofing around, drinking beer, and they realize, shit, we're out of food. So let's all go down to the supermarket about a mile down the road. The actor guy puts on a wife beater and jeans, and he's ready to go. And his weapon of choice is an aluminum baseball bat, which if I had to choose a bat, I mean, aluminum doesn't just shatter. I would take that as my bat of choice. The musician guy has a fucking, pulls these kendo sticks from out of nowhere. He's going to just whip shit with kendo sticks. And the reserved guy, whose weapon is a golf club, he takes some time and puts on a face mask and, you know, some arm pads and some gloves, and the other guys are kind of mocking him. He's like, hey, we got to take this shit serious. Now, these guys are young and a bit reckless, but not so reckless that we kind of just go, all right, this shit is stupid. And see, and that was good for me because I was really in the mood just to be entertained by an easygoing zombie movie that would make me laugh, make me go, oh, cool, at some of the special effects, and not have to get all deep with a social message. This movie absolutely delivered, which is why I liked it. And to be honest, I did read some of the reviews in this film, and most of which were not very good. For every five that said this movie was complete shit, two would go, hey, I thought it was kind of interesting, or it was entertaining, or it gave me a couple of laughs. I liked it. Not the best I've ever seen, but I was well entertained, probably because it met my quirky little criteria, foreign, Mad Max, zombies, and all that. So these three guys are walking down to the store, fighting zombies along the way. They're not trying to engage unnecessarily, for the most part. Get to the store, and they grab all their items, and it's a moment of bliss. They're kind of high-fiving each other with the shopping carts. And what I liked about this movie especially is they kept taking time away from the comedy or the action or the violence or the gore to show that these guys, while young and carefree for the most part, were friends. They were close. They knew that, you know, the three of us, each one of us is a third of our realm. We have that camaraderie, we have the understanding, and we have that friendship. I like that they took time out to show the closeness of these guys, that they got it, you know. And, I mean, they're doing what we would do. If this really happened, if we really had a zombie apocalypse, I don't know what the fuck I would do. I would probably rob all of my neighbors' houses of food, put it in mine, sit here and kind of hang out. And I would probably, fuck if I had power, play Xbox all fucking day. What else am I going to do? Not a ninja. So I mean, I think we could see, every one of us could see some of ourselves in these guys. So they go back to the house with their stuff, and I'm really going to paraphrase this movie. One of these guys has a kick-ass Ford, and Australian and cars from New Zealand, they enjoy the same vehicles we do, even our you know, home-brewed cars. They have Fords and Chevys, but they are a little different. For example, the last of the V8s that we remember from the Mad Max series, that's actually a Ford Falcon, but it was only available in Australia. The model was the Ford Falcon XJ, and you could not get the XJ in the Americas. That was strictly the Australian version. So they have it, but it's a little bit different. A different name and different looks slightly. So they hop into this kick-ass Ford, which is not a Falcon XJ, but they hop in this kick-ass Ford that's kind of set up like a Mad Max car in the sense that it's got a big spiky grill and it's really fast and designed to race around and knock zombies down. They drive by a church, want to inspect, look inside, and find a beautiful young lady named Steph. She's a scientist, what do you know, in her mid-20s as well with her dad. Her dad gets bit by a zombie, and they're all trying to escape because suddenly the church is full of these damn things. Now, Steph, this scientist, she has a blood sample in her pocket that needs to be taken to an island off the coast of wherever they're pretending they are to be turned into a cure. And in the scuffle, she drops the vial, and of course, Mr. I'm full of myself steps on it and busts it. So now this group, she says, hey, you guys got to help me. We can fix this problem, but we need to get blood. So you guys are going to need to take me back to my research hospital, I believe it was, get a sample with me, protect me, and then we'll go to the airport and fly this shit on a little Cessna over to the island, and we can stop this. And the guys are like, fuck it. Yeah, man, let's do it. What else are we going to do? Let's be heroes. They go to the hospital. They fight a bunch of zombies. And don't get me wrong, there's jokes and funny shit in between, things that make this entertaining, and in between some of these crass, silly jokes, some very thoughtful dialogue among these guys. You know, suddenly they're competing for her. The guy that's full of himself has the worst chance because she sees right through his bullshit. The reserved guy has just been nice and friendly, and she kind of likes him the most. And the musician guy, he just doesn't give a shit. He wants to party. So as they're leaving, they get their blood sampled, they get it in the centrifuge, they get it all separated, and it's all set to go. And sure enough, musician gets bit, and this does give us a time for a bit of closeness. These guys hug, and, you know, it's pretty clear they understand. We just lost a third of our population, and this man was a brother to me. You know, so they kind of get it, and they understand the gravity of the situation, and it's a very touching goodbye. And dude runs a distraction so the rest can go to the car and go to the airport. Well, shit. I'm not going to give any more away about the film except to say someone else gets bit. They try to take to the air and try to solve this problem by landing on the island. I'm not going to say who because it's a spoiler, and I kind of liked how this movie ended. So I don't want to ruin it for you because you can see this on Netflix right now. So let me see. What did I like? I liked the fact that it was easy to watch. It was pretty self-explanatory. I wasn't left wondering a bunch of crap as the who, what, when, where, how, and why. It made sense. I liked the dialogue. I could identify with all these guys. I'm sure every one of us could. They weren't so far-fetched that they were unbelievable. They were kind of funny. And they had serious sides of them as well. And I appreciated them taking the time to show that. It made it a good story. I mean, for what it is, it's a fucking zombie movie, okay? It's not, I'm not watching The Godfather 2, The Godfather 1, and I listed them in order of my favorite. Things like that. You know, this was great for what it was supposed to be. It looked nice, a little shaky in the filming, a little grainy on the capture, but from what I'm told, from what I read, they claim they filmed most of this for $5,000, showed it, and got an additional $40,000 as a pre-sale deal to finish the film. And it's a decent looking film, so it's certainly worth a watch. Some of our friends are going to die. And who? I'm not going to say. Makes it interesting. And do they save the world? Well, I don't know. You'll have to watch it and find out. But that's Last of the Living from 2009. If I had to find something I didn't like about it, it would be the we're trying to find a cure. I didn't mind the cure aspect. Like, say, in I Am Legend, because it made sense. These people were still very human, had some weird deformities starting to happen. But, you know, we think, well, we could probably bring these people back with the right drug. I've always had a problem with the cure being found for zombies. But when someone's clinically dead, you know, they're sustaining rapidly severe irreversible brain damage, tissue loss. I mean, blood's coagulating. I mean, granted, I know we're suspending disbelief, but so much happens to the body that within, you know, a matter of an hour, it's like, what are you going to do to try to cure it, to bring these people back to normalcy and restart their hearts or whatever? It's never made sense to me. But like in an I Am Legend style of thing, okay, yeah, bring these fools back around. So that would be the one thing I didn't like about this film. The music was good. It had some good stuff in it. It was a fun watch. So I say watch it. Last of the Living from 2009. Let me ask, have you guys signed up for our Halloween giveaway? What? McPierce has in his hands, ready to mail to you, autographed Clive Barker stuff, autographed John Carpenter, autographed Asia Argento, ready to go. Movies that you're going to want to see, ready to send out free of charge to you, our pals. You're our pals, you know that, right? Going to send this stuff to you just because you signed up. How do you sign up? Simple. Go to Facebook, look for A Little Dead Podcast. Click like. Hey, I like A Little Dead Podcast. That's the first half. Second click you need to do is on the official contest thread. And just say hello, whatever. Just give us a message in it. Hi, my cat's breath smells like cat food. Whatever, I don't give a shit. Post something, hello, in the thread. Then you're automatically entered. Just that simple. People are already signing up. Get on it now. Get in early. One entry, you're good. You're absolutely good. But you got to like us first. And we'll get that squared away on Halloween. Pick six people at random. Send them out. And we'll announce the winners, of course, on Facebook, Twitter, so forth. Anyway, folks, have a great week. We'll talk soon. And, yeah, zombies.
They're coming to get you, Barbara. They're coming for you, Barbara. They're coming for you. Look!
Welcome to a DVD of Total Terror, Knights of the Living Dead, reanimated. Over 100 artists, over 100 styles, over 2 hours of bonus footage and extras, reimagining George Romero's zombie classic, Knights of the Living Dead, reanimated.
It has been established that persons who have recently died have been returning to life and committing acts of murder. In all cases, the killers are eating flesh.
Knights of the Living Dead, reanimated. Art is dead. It's all messed up.
What's happening?
Everything will be all right.
Yeah, they're dead. They're all messed up.
Monsters in America, Our Historical Obsession with the Hideous and the Haunting, is the 2011 historical guidebook by W. Scott Poole, professor of American history at the College of Charleston, South Carolina. In its 228 pages, it covers the span of history from the settlers in Jamestown up to contemporary times and explores the beliefs, the social mores, and the taboos, and more particularly, the fears of each period. And he does so by looking at those fears in the reflection of them caught in the bedtime stories, fables, and myths of those periods. Have you ever looked at Frankenstein's monster as a personification of racism after the Reconstruction following the U.S. Civil War? Would you look at Rosemary's Baby and think it were an indication that feminism was something that frightened people? Or would you consider the American version of Godzilla in the 1950s with Raymond Burr as an attempt to allay fears of nuclear war and to instill confidence in Americans in their government? How about zombies as a statement about plastic surgery and the post-human stage of man? Pool takes us on a meandering road trip through the histories of America, not in a linear fashion, but using horror genres as the guide. Over the course of 7 chapters plus an epilogue, he shows us how our fears and campfire stories reflect the way Americans saw themselves and the world around them, especially the early settlers who faced an undiscovered land ahead of them that they feared were filled with cryptids and deviants and supernatural horrors. The waters were alive with giant sea creatures, and each of those monsters not just needed, but deserved to be killed. That confidence allowed the people to feel in some way they were in control of the world around them. Whether it's those serpents in the sea, hairy beasts in the woods, freaks in the circus, or the gothic horrors of Frankenstein or Dracula, what we feared most at any point in time made its way into our shared mythologies and found eternal life not so much in the supernatural as in the completely natural need to share those stories with each generation. One of the things I agreed with most in Poole's writing was the assertion that each story was, to some degree, meant to teach the next generation the limits of what is acceptable in society by showing them clearly what was outside of that acceptable limit. The monsters in the stories are used as a device to scare the younger generation into caution, to not go running headlong into the woods, either physically or metaphorically. It was to teach them what to fear. But at the same time, each story has the monster somehow being vanquished by someone from the old guard. Whether it's the God-fearing preacher on the pulpit divining the witches in their midst, or else the scientist who uses his knowledge, along with the military might of our armed forces, to destroy either the invading monster or the aliens, the stories almost always have a moral for the listener that has the teller's cohorts as being in the right and you should always listen to them. The only part where I disagreed with Poole wasn't in what he was asserting, but in his inclusion of the infecteds from 28 Days Later in his discussion of zombies. I would have much preferred he break out that discussion as a separate and equal discussion of how the infected films of recent years, such as That or Contagion or Carriers, as a way for dealing with the reality of worldwide epidemics. Think bird flu or SARS and the like, and then look at the very real examples of fear of global annihilation. Then look to those in the stories who save the day, or at least look at the heroes who manage to last just long enough to either die a noble death or act as a martyr for the viewers. Yes, the stories told are very similar, but they're not the same and they don't involve the same monster. When I first sat down with the book, I was immediately impressed with the level of research and the quality of the discussion in breaking down and examining the elements at each stage. Poole is obviously a fan of horror who has done his research. He's gone back to source material during the early 19th century, citing newspaper accounts of sea serpents seen along the shores of the U.S. He picks out pieces that reflect his love of the subject matter, such as his discussion of The Exorcist and its reflecting of fears of single parenthood and the inner conflict between science and belief that had been growing during the prior decade, and lights a similar fire in the reader. By the time I finished reading that section, and even more so the one on science fiction horror from the 50s and 60s, I wanted to immediately go home and dig out my anthologies of the same films and watch all of them. All in all, this is a great, inspiring, and insightful read, and for an intelligent and thoughtful read, it manages to avoid becoming a dry tome. Instead, Poole made Monsters in America a thought-provoking and interesting read that I highly recommend to you. On our buy it, borrow it, or don't bother scale, it is most definitely a buy. Get a copy and read it, and I'm sure you'll agree with me that it's an awesome text. The book itself becomes available on October 15th from Baylor University Press and can be pre-ordered today on Amazon. The hard copy is $29.95, but there's no Kindle release at the moment. But I'll definitely get a copy for my Kindle when it's available so I can have it with me all the time.
Anyway, that would be far too quick. And the one thing your demise is not going to be is quick.
If I stop, no, it's waking up. It's waking up!
Vincent picked me up that night, only he wasn't taking me to Chicago like he said. He was taking me for a ride.
Your sense of humor will serve you in good stead here, Mr. Snobotnik.
Within 10 minutes, I'll either be broke, or she'll have a hook for a hand. Still game?
Oh, sweet Jesus. Sweet Jesus, it's real. It's real.
Come day's end, when the sun retreats below the horizon, the mundane gives way to the bizarre, the bestial. The familiar world plunges from light into shadow, while another realm comes to tenebrous, sinister wakefulness. No locked door can save you as darkness falls.
You unlock this door with the key of imagination. Beyond it is another dimension. A dimension of sound. A dimension of sight. A dimension of mind. You're moving into a land of both shadow and substance, of things and ideas. You've just crossed over into the Twilight Zone.
Hey, everybody. Welcome to another edition of Get in the Zone. I'm your host, Misfit Boy. And this week, as we get into the fifth dimension, well, let's see, how do we put this one? Two bickering relatives. One's ends up dead, and the other dwells slowly into madness. And later, can a grandfather clock dictate a man's life and how long he's going to live? Well, we'll just have to find out. But first, let's hear from the man that made us pull the blankets over our head as kids, Mr. Rod Serling.
Dramatis personae, Mr. Simon Polk, a gentleman who has lived out his life in a gleeful rage. And the young lady who's just beat the hasty retreat is Mr. Polk's niece, Barbara. She has lived her life as if during each ensuing hour she had a dentist appointment. There's yet a third member of the company soon to be seen. He now resides in the laboratory, and he is the kind of character to be found only in the Twilight Zone.
This episode is entitled Uncle Simon, and it all revolves around Barbara. She has been taking care of her Uncle Simon for 20 years after an accident, and she's very bitter about it at this point because he's, well, he's very mean. He's constantly demanding her to bring him hot chocolate, hot chocolate, hot chocolate. One night, as they're bickering with one another by a flight of stairs, he falls back as after he tries to hit Barbara with his cane. She grabs it, and he trips, falls, breaks his back, begs her for assistance, for help. Well, Barbara decides it'd probably be best to just let the old man die. See, he's a scientist who's been working on an experiment, never allowing her to see it. But at this point, she doesn't care. She just wants him out of her life. And that's exactly what she's going to get, or so she thinks. After a few days, Uncle Simon finally passes away. And she's none the happier. His attorney comes to tell her that she is the sole heir of his entire estate, the house, everything. But there are two stipulations. The first stipulation, she can never leave the house. She can never sell it or anything. She must always remain here, which is not a problem. But the second is that she is to care for his latest experiment. Now they go to a room and open a door, and there behind the door is standing a 6-foot-tall robot. Looks directly at Barbara, introduces himself as Uncle Simon's creation, and proceeds to ask for hot chocolate. Now, at first, Barbara can deal with the fact that there's a robot living in the house, but after a while, she starts noticing that instead of a regular robotic voice, the voice is almost sounding human from time to time. And it starts to drive her a little nuts. After a while, she can no longer take all the demands from the robot, who's almost a replica of Uncle Simon. She proceeds to push the robot down the steps also. But, unfortunately, the robot doesn't die. And later, towards the end of the episode, we have Barbara bringing in hot chocolate to the robot in Uncle Simon's office. As the robot turns to face Barbara, he answers politely, "Thank you, Barbara," in Uncle Simon's voice. Now Barbara realizes she will never leave the home and is basically still under the control of good old Uncle Simon.
Dramatis personae, a metal man, who will go by the name of Simon, whose life as well as his body has been stamped out for him. And the woman who tends to him, the Lady Barbara, who's discovered belatedly that all bad things don't come to an end, and that once a bed is made, it's quite necessary that you sleep in it. Tonight's uncomfortable little exercise in avarice and automatons from The Twilight Zone.
Ellen. Guess what? I had sex with two girls last night.
Great. I masturbated and cried myself to sleep.
I like my night better.
Each man measures his time, some with hope, some with joy, some with fear. But Sam Forstman measures his allotted time by a grandfather's clock, a unique mechanism whose pendulum swings between life and death, a very special clock that keeps a special kind of time in the Twilight Zone.
This episode is entitled 90 Years Without Slumbering. And it revolves around an old man named Sam who's a clockmaker. Now, he has a weird obsession with clocks, and it's starting to bother his granddaughter, who is pregnant and going to have a baby. Now, he's constantly waking up at around 4 a.m. or so just to do maintenance on the clock. She feels it's getting a little out of control, so she calls her friend, who's a psychiatrist, and after a little while of arguing, he decides to go and see him. Well, the psychiatrist doesn't think he's crazy, nor does Sam. But as he's leaving the office, he does inform the psychiatrist that when the clock stops, he will die. Now, this goes all the way back to his father, his grandfather. They've all told him the same thing because, you see, the clock was made on the day that he was born, which was 74 years ago. So finally, one night while Sam's in bed, his spirit comes out of him and is standing at the foot of his bed, telling him that you sold the clock to try and get rid of the problems that it's caused you, and now you are going to die. See, what happened was, Sam thought that maybe if he sold the clock to a neighbor, the problems would all just go away. But unfortunately, they went out of town for the weekend, and there's no one there to do maintenance on the clock. So without the clock being wound, now Sam is going to die. Or is he? Sam finally comes to the realization that, you know what? It's all in my mind. I'm really not going to die. And he then tells his spirit, I'm not going anywhere. I'm going to have a great-grandson soon, and I plan on spending time with him. Time. That is the essence. The spirit then disappears. His granddaughter comes in and asks if everything's okay, and he said it's never been better, informing her that when the clock stopped, I was reborn. Well, that's it for me, everybody. Hope you all enjoyed this week's segment as much as I did doing it. You can catch me here every week, right here, on A Little Dead Podcast. So, this is Misfit Boy, and I'm in the zone.
Clocks are made by men. God creates time. No man can prolong his allotted hours. He can only live them to the fullest, in this world or in the Twilight Zone.
Yeah. Dr. Steve Wands brings you Stay Dead, The Stranger, and Tunnel Rats. A novella that will be sure to send shivers down your spine. Get your copy of Stay Dead, The Stranger, and Tunnel Rats at Amazon.com or Lulu.com.
Attention all scientific personnel. There's been a security breach.
Whoa!
Get him!
There he is!
I'm gonna have to catch you some other time! This can't be good! Where am I? '76? You gotta be kidding me! Time for more fun!
What kind of monster could commit such a massacre?
It's a gingerbread man.
A gingerbread man.
Time for a little disco Guinness and...
Everybody run!
This'll be a 1976 you'll never forget!
Is this a killer night or what?
TGIF.
Ginger Dead Man 3, Saturday Night Cleaver, is the 2011 sci-fi horror dark comedy written by Muffy Boulding and William Butler, directed by Butler and Sylvia St. Croix, and distributed by Full Moon Direct. It stars Paris Wagner as Cherry Wright, Kent Fuhrer as Trixie, and Butler himself as the voice of the Ginger Dead Man. The film also co-starred Boulding as Ingrid Harshman. The film production costs aren't reported, and the film only just was released on DVD, so there are no revenue figures to report either. I couldn't find a tagline for the film, but IMDb gives it 5.7 out of 10 stars based on 9 votes as of today. The film opens with an asylum on a hill, a home for homicidal baked goods. The inmates, or are they patients, include baguettes with bad attitudes, brownies who are baked, and cream puffs who are just plain creepy.
That little cream puff, he shouted something at you. Tell me, what did he say?
He said, "I can smell your muffin."
I, however, cannot.
The scene, which borrowed from Silence of the Lambs, has Clarissa walking down a hallway surrounded by the dangerous pastries, including a cream-filled pot of choux Migs with a little surprise for her.
Hey, Mary, how would you like to get yourself sticky with a little cream puff?
Clarissa's purpose was to talk to the Ginger Dead Man, who's being restrained on a table and who has a mask on just like Dr. Lecter. But when deranged activists burst into the asylum and free the Ginger Dead Man, things go from bad to worse. You see, there's not just an asylum for deadly desserts, but also a scientific research laboratory on the premises. Stay with me here. And one of the items being researched is time travel. And when our killer confection bursts through the door, kills the scientists, and hits the controls, he finds himself thrown back into 1976 and the disco and roller rink era. That's right, plaid pants, dynamite, Welcome Back Cotter, the Bee Gees, and more.
Of all the shithead decades to get stranded in!
Well, it was also the start of Stephen King's best writing period, so don't be so negative about the 70s. And there was also some cool television shows like Planet of the Apes and Space 1999. And we also had some great films in that period, like Friday the 13th and Halloween. But regarding Stephen King, that is the next series of homages in the story. There's an underlying nod to the film Carrie with our heroine, Cherry Wright, and her psychic powers. Her aunt Trixie owns the skating rink where the Ginger Dead Man appears, and tonight is its last night. The rink is closing down, but it's going to have one final roller disco queen contest. And there will be blood, pig's blood, and there will be murder and mayhem. And that's just for starters.
Welcome to Saturday Night Cleaver!
This film was, quite frankly, very funny. Like the second film, it had that sense of not quite taking itself seriously that Full Moon is very good at doing. While our killer is your classic wanton slasher type, who kills hot chicks for no reason, who also spits out one-liners and contextual commentary, you're still entertained by the fact that he's a freaking talking cookie. And at that, an ugly one. But this time around, we get to see him running around due to some CGI animation. So it's not just a puppet we get to see, including getting to see not just his insides, but also the Ginger Dead Man's, let's call it his sodium-free pretzel stick.
Oh, yeah.
But there were no munchkins to go with him, if you know what I mean. He sticks his stuff through a glory hole while trying to hit on Ingrid in a very weirdly non-erotic sexual scene that was strangely humorous. Anyway, we learn a little bit too much about Ginger Dead anatomy. And speaking of anatomy, the only disappointment I had in the film was that we didn't get to see anybody else's anatomy. In particular, the hot little blonde named Peaches. When she and her boyfriend start tripping on some mushrooms and various pharmaceuticals, they get off the ground, but not enough for her to show her cream puffs. And quite frankly, I wanted that. You see, she had that annoying baby doll voice thing going that I really just don't get. It's about as sexy as doing duck face. Why does anybody find that attractive? Maybe it's just me, but I think a woman who sounds like she's dumb is just not hot. Now, intelligence is another story. I mean, if she were talking about the galaxy rise of 400 billion stars like Carl Sagan and had a hot body like that, then I'd be all over her like white on rice. But when they just act and sound dumb, it makes me side with the killer cookie.
Self, it's a homicidal confectionery treat! Everybody run!
Something I really found cool in the film was the roller skating. Seriously, there were some well-done feats of athleticism in this film. I remember being in junior high school when the film Roller Boogie came out, which is not another podcast. And I used to go to the skating rink at the time as well, with my velour shirts and my bootcut jeans and my derby. Yeah, I wore a derby. And my cool wool high school jacket with the leather sleeves. Man, I'd love to have one of those again. Anyway, where I used to skate, there was this one guy that we called Disco Dan, but I don't remember his real name. And there were other friends of his who also did all of those skating moves. Well, not the more involved ones like flips, but the other cool stuff that involves skating and dancing. And at the time, I thought it was pretty cool. Also, the way the skaters were dressed definitely takes me back to when I was a kid and would meet my girlfriend there on the weekends. Yeah, it was cheesy by today's standard and corny and all, but at the time, it was pretty cool. And I always wanted to be a floor guard at the rink. To get in for free, to wear the black and white shirt and skate each shift, and be able to talk to the babes and all, man, what a dork. Huh. All in all, though, this film was fun and funny. There are a ton of references to 70s culture and icons woven naturally into the dialogue. They don't beat you over the head with the period stuff, but instead just let it fall out for those of us who will get it and find it and enjoy it. And on our buy it, borrow it, or don't bother scale, I'm going to rate Ginger Dead Man 3, Saturday Night Cleaver, a firm borrow. Like I said, it's fun, it's funny, and it makes me hungry for another story, especially with its wacky and out-of-left-field ending that borrowed a little from Warehouse 13 and with a strange take on fighting fire with fire.
Freeze, you little fun-sized fucker!
Oh? Sorry, brown sugar! I'm gonna have to catch you some other time, man!
How often does this happen to you?
What do you mean it's my turn? They just got to the good part.
Or this.
I've got about 5 minutes to kill. Not enough time to read a book.
Or this.
Honey, can you give me something to read? I'm going to be a few minutes, if you know what I mean.
Do you like your media bite-sized with vicious pointy teeth bites? Try Angry Gnome Comic Short Stack Series. Each issue presents 13 juicy ultra-short stories you can really sink your teeth into. Angry Gnome Comics are available at www.angrygnomecomics.com. This is your announcer speaking.
Honey, could you, hand me a beer?
Thank you for joining me for this week's episode of A Little Dead Podcast. Big thanks to Misfit Boy for getting us in the zone, and to Mike Zombie for being dead and loving it. And a huge thank you to Scott Poole for the review copy of Horror in America. Join me next week when I'll be reviewing 2011's Beware. But until then, I'm out of here. So till the next episode, this is your friend McPierce saying later. You've been listening to A Little Dead Podcast. You can email comments to us at alittledead@gmail.com, or you can call them in on the Little Dead comment line at 206-338-0665. You can download the show from iTunes or from our website at alittledead.com. You can stream the show using the smartphone app from stitcher.com. You can follow me on Twitter. My screen name is McPierce. You can join our Facebook group and be sure to check out our forums at forums.alittledead.com. And with those exciting announcements, I know you're anxious at it. The film is done in the style of the classic slasher zombie film. That's not a zombie film. The film is done in this edit. David Cronenberg has a sequel to 1986's The Fly, which is another podcast, including a script. Really, fuck that one up. Edit. There's also a sculpture rumored... Edit. Edit. There's also a sculpture rumored... Edit. Which refers to the elite executive edit, citing newspaper accounts of sea serpents. Oh, edit. Citing newspaper edit. Edit. Well, anyway, we learn a little bit more about the ginger dead man. Edit. Anyway, we learn a little bit. Edit.
Hey, Gordy, give me a shot! Bleorg